Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Get Smart IMS Applications with COBOL and Java Interoperability. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how you can combine your COBOL business logic with IMS solutions for Java and gain a more flexible programming environment. The speaker for today's teleconference is Kenny Blackman, Advanced Technical Support IMS Specialist. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Kenny Blackman.
Thanks. Today, I said we're going to talk about COBOL and Java. When I started researching this presentation and putting it together, I was looking, and IMS and COBOL have been together for almost 40 years now, providing application processing capabilities. And IMS and Java have been partners for almost 10 years now. We introduced Java capability back in version 7. So since that time, I would say there's been a lot of changes to COBOL itself. We've also made improvements to how we support Java with IMS. So what we're going to do today then is kind of look at some of those capabilities and how you can leverage your existing procedural COBOL code, utilize this enterprise COBOL, and as you build new applications that you might want to exploit some Java technology, how you could get those two to work together. So slide two is kind of an agenda of things we want to talk about today. So I'm going to do a quick review of OO, object-oriented programming, because Java and enterprise COBOL both are OO languages. So kind of just talk about some of the highlights for that. Quick review of what Java is all about, how it comes together, how you create Java programs. And we'll get into enterprise COBOL. We'll see how the enterprise COBOL can be used to support Java syntax and give you that OO flavor. And we'll see then how we utilize enterprise COBOL and IMS message process regions we have today. Then we're going to move into IMS Java itself. What we want to talk about there is how we've developed and improved our driver capabilities now. With IMS version 11, we have the concept of universal drivers, so we'll kind of go over those. And we'll look at the Java API as it pertains to IMS dependent region processing, and also how that API can be used for database access. To help us do that, we'll talk about the DLI model utility, how that could be help us build the database views we need for IMS Java classes in both IMS 9, 10, and 11 environments. And at the very end, then we'll wrap up. Then I have a little sample application that we put together that's part of the dealership application that's shipped with IMS to kind of give you a flavor of how you can build these applications using Java technology and IMS technology with COBOL. So slide three, in the old review, essentially what you have with old programming is you start out with a class. And in that class, you're going to define your data definitions and your methods of operations. And then at runtime then, when the old program starts running and starts utilizing the class, you're going to create object instances of each one of those. Now, when I first started working with object-oriented programming, look at this, we had these notions of these rings to kind of show you where the methods and the data was, and one of the things it was trying to show with this was a notion of encapsulation, how I could hide the data, and the only way I could get to that data was through using the methods. So I've looked at these before, and I thought, well, they look like either, if you're old enough to remember core memory from the systems 360 days, they kind of look like that. They look like donuts. Or they also look like lifesavers. So I guess if you're a application programmer and you want to start building new applications and you want to leverage what you've got, the classes could be a lifesaver for you as far as building those new functions. So the other part we have then because of that on slide four is inheritance. So once I have a class in place, I have some methods defined and some data defined, I could create a subclass and I can inherit then those data methods, those data functions and method functions to help me build new classes. So I can introduce new methods. So it gives me a way then to extend my original application program using OO technology. So that's really been the power behind OO programming all along, is to give you ways then to leverage what you've done before, and the common notion is called reuse. So moving to slide five then, in the Java review, the way Java works, you start out with a source file, and the source file is the .java. So whatever you want to call your program, .java is your basic source. And what Java provides is a Java compiler called Java C. So what happens then is you take your Java source, you go to the Java compiler, and you're going to create a .class file. Now that .class file is what we call platform-neutral bytecodes. And the idea behind that is that once I have these class files, the program could run anywhere where I have a JVM, a Java Virtual Machine. Now another thing I could choose to do is take and zip those files up, what we call a jar file. So a Java archive file is a jar file that gives you a way then to take all your .class files and bundle those as one package. And that's where you get your jar file. So now I've got my platform neutral bytecodes all bundled up, ready to run as an application. So the next thing I need then from the Java world is a Java Virtual Machine, a JVM. So when I start up a runtime environment with the JVM, part of the job of the JVM is to follow the class path to look where your application code is that you just created, either your .class files or your jar files, and pull those in. And as it reads those, what it's going to do is convert those bytecodes that were platform neutral to instructions that are specific to a particular platform you're running on. So if I have a Java code I'm going to run on ZOS, the JVM I'd run there would know how to take those bytecodes and convert those to instruction set that runs on ZOS itself. So that's the nice thing about Java. It gives you that platform neutrality as far as your application. And you can deploy it anywhere as far as your runtime environments. Now, Enterprise COBOL, what it provides is OO technologies. The object-oriented COBOL gives us a way then to build new COBOL application programs utilizing OO technology. But the other part it gives us is the ability then to interoperate with Java programs. So what I could do now is I could have a Java application invoke COBOL class methods that I create. But I could also have a COBOL program then invoke Java methods. And we do this based upon the Java native interface. So Java has defined a way using Java native interface, the JNI, to allow interoperability between Java and other runtime environments or application environments. So in the case of COBOL then, what COBOL provides is a new invoke statement. And that invoke statement then maps onto JNI calls. So you don't have to write the Java native interface yourself. COBOL will do that for you. And likewise, and then COBOL class methods, they define, they give definitions for those Java native methods. So Enterprise COBOL with its O technology allows us to write O application programs in COBOL and use those, but it also allows us then to interface and utilize Java classes and Java objects. So moving to the next slide now, slide 7, what we're going to talk about is how COBOL works as far as its class definitions. So in this example here, I'm going to start with COBOL source code. And COBOL provides a compiler that I will use in to compile my code. What you'll notice in this case is that what we're going to produce is two outputs. We're going to look at the COBOL definitions, and we're going to create a COBOL object program that's going to implement the native methods that an object would provide. And it's also going to generate the Java class source that's going to contain the class definitions. But I have these two output files. What I need to do then is, because we're going to generate Java source, I then use the Java compiler to take that Java source and create my Java class files and my jar files. So once up to that point, it looks like I've already created a program that's a Java program. I just use old COBOL syntax to write the code and eventually generate my Java code. The other part then I create is what we call a shared object. And I'm going to take my shared object and put it in a dynamic link library. So this way, when I go through my runtime, then I could automatically load in like a dynamic call to bring in that Java code I need to execute that application program. That kind of gives you a feel then of how Enterprise COBOL with this technology can help you now start leveraging Java objects or creating Java objects to be used by Java application programs. So moving to slide 8 then, COBOL also provides inheritance capability. So this example I have for you here, you can see where I can have an existing Java object in place, and I can create a new COBOL object, define a new COBOL class, and I can inherit from then the Java language class. So This gives you one approach, one way where COBOL can be used to leverage Java. So it gives me that OO reuse because I'm able to inherit the functions provided by the Java class and utilize those and build upon those to build a COBOL application program. On slide 9, I give you another technique as far as interoperability then. Here, using that Java Native interface, in this example, I could have a Java object who's going to use its invoke method to call upon an object that happens to be written in COBOL, and we've seen in the previous slides that really what we do with Enterprise COBOL is create Java code. And then what we do is have our COBOL object instance turn around and use its invoke method then to call upon a Java object instance. So in this case, I'm using the invoke statement, the invoke method provided by the COBOL compiler to call upon a Java object. And in that case, the COBOL code will use the Java Native interface to help me leverage in that object code. So there's a way then within this interface, in this JNI interface, I can go from Java to COBOL back to Java again if I want. Now that's great for running with new enterprise COBOL programs that support OO technology, but what if I need to get the existing code? So on the next slide, slide 10, what we talk about is OO COBOL provides what we call a wrapper class. So what the wrapper class allows us to do then is have Java be able to call Enterprise COBOL wrapper class, and then the Enterprise COBOL class can make a call to your existing procedure code. So this is a way then I could start leveraging and utilizing my existing procedure code I've had running forever through this API. So when you create this wrapper class, it's called a factory class, and that defines the class data and methods. So the data we're defining, you could think of that as Java private static data, and the methods you could find, you could view those as Java public static methods. So once I have this in place then, on slide 11, you can see how we can start pulling this together as far as leveraging that runtime environment. So here in this example, what I want to be able to do is I have the existing procedure code, COBOL code, I've had running for a while, and I want to create then this wrapper class then to access that procedure code. So I define my factory method, and then I'm going to do in there is make a call to my COBOL program. So the Java code then that I have running is going to invoke a method that I've defined in my wrapper class. When I call upon that wrapper class, then inside of there is where I make the call in this case. I'm not doing an invoke now. I'm doing a call out to a subroutine, which is really just my COBOL program. So the wrapper class gives us the capability to, while I'm running inside of a JVM, Java Virtual Machine, I can go over then and move away and access to my existing COBOL code. So I'm still running a ZOS runtime environment. And you'll notice here in this case where I'm showing ZOS runtime, because I'm running inside of a JVM on ZOS, one of the technologies we can take advantage of is a ZAP. So what ZOS will provide for us is if I have a ZAP installed on my as a hardware box as a CPU, I could call upon that CPU, then that ZAP processor, to process my Java code. Well, while I'm running Java, then I could leverage that ZAP processor. When I cross over, make that call to procedure code, the ZOS dispatcher will recognize I've now gone over to the COBOL world, and he'll shift off the ZAP process and go back to the regular CPU processor. So I just want to give you an example of how you can still leverage in your investment you've got in your COBOL procedure today utilizing that wrapper class. So moving on to slide 12 then, what I have here is a chart that kind of shows what we've been doing in the case of IMS. We've been working with how Java interoperability can be used from outside of IMS to get to IMS application programs. We've also done some work to allow IMS application programs to go outside of IMS to access services. So you can see what this chart then is, we're providing different ways, different technologies where Java runtime environments can come in and access IMS application programs for processing. So what we want to do then is take that down further inside and look within the IMS application itself and what we could do as far as leveraging those technologies. So moving to slide 13, like say back with version 7 of IMS, we introduced IMS Java capabilities and gave you a Java API that you can use. We call those Java drivers. So back with IMS 9 and 10, since 7, 8, 9, and 10, we had our drivers support what we call the JDBC 2.1 API. And we've provided then a way for you to run inside of IMS Java Dependent Regions, a JMP, a Java Message Processor Region, a JBP, a Java Batch Processor Region. We also supported runtimes in KIX, where if you use JKIX library functions, DB2 store procedures, where you had a store procedure running in a Java environment, and a web for application server, either on ZOS or distributed platforms. So our Java classes provided that support. With version 11 of IMS, what we're introducing now is our universal drivers that support the JDBC 3.0 API. So on slide 14, you see we had the same challenge as far as getting from the Java world to the IMS world that we had with Java accessing COBOL. We need to go through a JNI interface, a Java interface. So our IMS Java class libraries, they provide that interoperability then for you. So when your application, when you write your Java classes using our JDBC API, our IMS Java code then will know how to do the conversion of that code to get to the IMS DL1 interface. So as we work our way down through converting that Java code, we're going to eventually get to AER to DLI or CE to DLI or AIB to DLI interface based upon the runtime environment we're in. And from there, once we have that, we're going to get to DFSLI 000 or a similar interface to get to IMS. So our IMS code then gives you that JNI, that Java Native Interface conversion between those two runtime environments. I'll also point out that we only support with our IMS Java classes the AIB interface. So in the AIB interface, then, as you know, we use PCB name or PSB name for processing. So in your PSB gen, you'd have to have for your PCB statements either a PCB label name or PCB name equals to specify that particular PCB you want to use for that database. All right, moving to slide 15 then. So we look at this as far as interoperability. What takes place in our IMS JMP regions or JPP regions is during initialization, IMS is going to launch a JVM, a Java Virtual Machine. Remember we said we have to have a JVM to process the bytecodes that are produced by Java in order to support that runtime environment. So you can think of a JMP as same thing as an MPP, a Message Process Region, plus a JVM. And for a JPP, you could think of that as a non-message-driven BMP that also includes a JVM. So those runtime environments give us the capability then for you to write Java application programs and deploy those to runtime environments. And then the nice thing you said about enterprise COBOL now is I could take enterprise COBOL, which we've seen can create Java objects for us and provide Java interoperability. So in that same JMP region environment or JPP environment, I could also use enterprise COBOL code in conjunction with my Java code to build new application programs. All right, so on slide 16, what I want to talk to you about is one of the capabilities we have with the JVM, our virtual machine, is what we call a class cache. So we could share this. And in this example here, what I've shown is I could have a Java language object and an OBOL COBOL object existing within a cache. And the idea behind this caching in is to allow us to keep your applications hot, if you will, alive and running. So whenever I have a JVM start up, I look to see, do I have a cache? If I do, when I start a program in my IMS dependent region, we'll look to see, have I already brought that application in? Do I have it available within the cache? If I do, I can leverage that so I don't have to go through a reload process as far as processing. Kind of like, a little bit like IMS preload for MPP programs, only it's more dynamic. So So I could take advantage of this, and this, like I said, this is technology provided by the JVM itself. IMS just supports that JVM capability. Now, moving to slide 17, one of the things that is occurring is that I have applications, a couple of application programs, I have message processing regions, and maybe I want to have Java subroutines that I want to use. And I don't need a full-blown JMP environment. What I just want to be able to do is launch a JVM and MPP regions. So we can take advantage of that with Enterprise COBOL. In this case, the MPP region is going to start up when we schedule the application program, and that program has Enterprise COBOL in it. As soon as the Enterprise COBOL code does an invoke method to create an object, at that time, COBOL will look to see in this runtime environment, in this case the message processing region, do I have a Java virtual machine running? The answer will be no, so COBOL itself will launch the JVM inside the MPP region. Once that's in place, then I can run just like I'm running in the JMP region as far as that particular application instance. Now, there is an example I have on your slide here, a URL you can go to where you could download a sample application program that's been created to allow you to play around with this. You want to use this technology, this capability. So on slide 18 then, regarding that shared class cache capability, what I could do is I could have a JMP region running my IMS Java with the JVM, and I could also have an MPP region where I've used old COBOL to launch the JVM. And they could both point to that shared class cache. So there's a way I could kind of take advantage and leverage then the initialization, if you will, of my MPP region and utilize some of the cache functions. So in this example I have, I want to show you that with version 10, with that SDK version 5, that's when we first put that support in. We do have an APAR with version 9. That allows us also to provide the SDK version 5 support. So with that APAR, I could also take advantage of the SDK's shared class capabilities. In the left-hand corner, it's got a little code snippet there, a little example that shows you as a system program which you'd set up as far as the profile member for IMS itself, where you specify the JVM options. That's the DFS JVM MS. And then the environment where you specify the path name where the actual JVM is installed. What you will do is you will install, you go to OS 390 and you download the Java support for the 390 platform, and you install that, and once you've got that installed, you just need to tell IMS where is your directory, where have you put that Java support. All right. Another thing you do on slide 19 is you can have multiple shared class caches. So in this example, what I may want to do is I may have some JMP regions. I want them to have their own cache. And I may have some MPP regions where I'm running this Enterprise COBOL, this launch in JVM, and they can also have their own cache. This way I can separate then those caches and run those. Another thing that takes place then is that if I stop JMP region, and I take it down, the JVM for that particular region will go away, but the cache class will still stay around because I still have other JMP regions running and accessing that. In the case of an MPP region, when the MPP application finishes, the JVM is going to be taken down. However, the class cache could still stay around, so I could still have other applications running in other MPP regions where they can still leverage that class cache for processing. All right, moving to slide 20 then, what's a technique I could use through Enterprise COBOL in order for me to launch a JVM? So in this case, on this slide here, we have an example of a LE module, a user option module, where I need to specify the location of Java. So I would create this module, link edit this then with the application program that's going to want to use the JVM inside the MPP region. When I schedule the application program, then I'll be able to have a way then to find where is the environment itself, the Java itself for launching that JVM. On in slide 21, I continue with the specifications where in there I identify the path name I need to get to, the live path where the Java is, and the class path, which tells me where is my COBOL application program that I've compiled and created as a Java objects. And the COB JVM options, then that just gives me information about the JVM itself. When I start a JVM, I need to be able to tell the memory size, what's the maximum memory size, minimum memory size I want to have. So information about that, where the shared class cache is, if I want to use that. So there's how you can specify using this COB JVM option statement, that information as far as launching that JVM and inside MPP region. Remember I said, in the case of an MPP, IMS does not launch a JVM, so we don't know that your application, in this case your enterprise COBOL application, has launched a JVM and run that. Once again, when the application finishes, COBOL recognizes we're going away. COBOL will tell the JVM to destroy itself and go away. So now the MPP region looks like any other MPP region again. All right, so that's background on Java, Enterprise COBOL, JMP, MPP regions. Now what I'm going to start moving into is I have this interoperability and capability. How can I leverage this? So on slide 22, one of the things we introduced with version 10, what we call synchronous callout. And this gave us a way then to provide an application access outbound to services, either something running in WebSphere via SOAP Gateway or Roy Your Own. So we introduced a new call, a deal one call called iCall that gave this capability. So on slide 23, I have an example how I could use iCall with the COBOL interface. iCall is AIB to DLI interface, so it's going to use an AIB. And it shows you then how I could have set up my iCall, my call out message area when I'm send data out, and my response area comes back. That's one way I could write this. Another way, which I show on slide 24, is I could have our IMS Java classes. And what we did in the case of IMS Java classes is we support the Java Message Services API. So this is a standard Java API for using JMS services. So what I could do then is code using the JMS API to access, make that call out into that world. So this gives you another way you could do iCall processing interoperability with your COBOL and your Java environments. On slide 25, then, what I want to start moving into is the real power of our IMS Java classes is our JDBC API. JDBC is the standard API that Java defines to allow you then to navigate through and access databases. So we support that API. And essentially what you're going to do is you open up a connection to a database. You make some queries against that database and get your results. You process that results and close the connection. So the JDBC API, in that definition, defines an SQL interface to allow us to get to those databases. So what we did in the case of IMS, then, is we provided support for that. So on slide 26, what I have for you is kind of a mapping of the SQL and IMS concepts. What our Java classes do in order for us to get from the SQL API into the DL1 world. So we view an IMS segment as a table. We view the fields within that segment as columns. And then the segment key is the table's primary key. And each segment instance that I have represents a table row. So we use that terminology then as far as mapping in from the SQL world to the IMS world. The other thing we did is we view the DBD then as a way of looking at tables, if we will, the IMS segments, as pre-joined tables. So that's what we do for our Java classes, help you leverage that JDBC API against IMS databases. So on slide 27, what we've done then is we've extended our capabilities with what we call universal drivers. So what you'll see with IMS 11 is type 2 and type 4 connections. A type 2 connection is this: I'm in the same LPAR boundary where my IMS is running today. I have my runtime environments, my IMS TM, CICS, DB2 store procedures, a WebSphere application server on ZOS. So that's a local API, a local connection that'll get us right to IMS and retrieve the data. What we introduce with IMS 11 is a new address space, a CSL address space called ODBM, Open Database Manager. Now what we can do with ODBM is leverage that environment and open up access to distributed world. So we now also support type 4 connections with our JDBC drivers. So I can have now a universal client running on the distributed platform, and we adhere to the DRDA protocols. We use TCP/IP then, come in through IMS Connect. IMS Connect knows how to talk to ODBM, and from there we are able to access IMS databases. So now with our universal drivers, not only do we just support JDBC 3.0, but we also support Type 2 and Type 4 connections to help you leverage your IMS databases. All right, so on slide 28, some of the things we introduced then with our Open Database API, those enhancements, is a concept called virtual foreign keys, and I'll talk about that. Updatable result sets, metadata discovery, the auto-commit support, and set size capabilities. So on slide 29, then, virtual foreign keys, what we want to be able to do then is support the SQL API. So on an insert, what I'm able to do now is specify the keys that we need to help us navigate through the IMS database, because we still have to go through the hierarchy world to figure out where am I within the database hierarchy to insert that particular value. So in this example here, you can see where I'm going to add a new segment, C2, and when I want to add that, I have the values for C2, but I also include the values then for A and B as far as giving me the keys I need to navigate through the database. On slide 30, then, what we show you is what we call updatable result sets. So once I've gone through, in this case, I've done a select to retrieve some data from IMS, and I have a result set, as I process that, I could use the update to say, okay, make a change to this result and send that back to the IMS database. It gives you a way then to leverage then the SQL API against the IMS database. The next slide that I have on slide 31 is a capability we introduced with version 9 of IMS, and that's called SQL support. What we give you then is that I can leverage then, say, my COBOL and my Java using our JDBC API. We can now go against IMS databases, exist IMS databases today, and so retrieve the data, pull it out. We can create an XML document and ship that out as a response. Likewise, coming in, we could receive an XML document, pull that in, use our JDBC API then to take the XML document, and we can either parse it and then store it into an existing IMS database, or what we could choose to do then is just take the entire XML document and store it inside of an IMS database. All right, so slide 32, what I have for you is some of the steps you go through if I want to build an IMS Java application that's going to run inside of a JMP region. So what I would need to do is define the input output messages. So just like I would do with COBOL today, where I define the input messages coming in from an outside client or our 3270 device, and the output response is going to send back. What we also need then, in the case of our JDBC API, is to define a database layout. We have to have a view. What does the database look like? We have to know what those segment hierarchy is and then the fields within that segment, because we have to make that conversion between the Java world to the IMS world. So to help us to do that, on slide 33, we have what we call DLI model utility. So what I could do with DLI model utility is pull in the PSB information, the DBD information, So now I know the hierarchy of the database, and I know what segments I get access. We also could pull in the COBOL CopyLab information that tells us the field representations, packed decimal, strings, character, whatever they are, and generate then the Java representation of that. That Java database view is what our IMS Java class is used then to work through the IMS database. A thing that we've introduced with version 11 is now what we can do is pull in an XML schema. Look at that XML schema, and DLI Model Utility could generate a database then, DBD definition that represents that XML schema. So now I can take and leverage that and create new databases based upon the XML schema, use our JDBC API to store that XML document into the IMS database then as an intact document. All right, so slide 34, the mixed language dealership sample. What I have here is we provide Enterprise COBOL, where the front end could be Enterprise COBOL that provides the main routine, and the back end could be IMS database access. Or if it's IMS Java, then the back end could be IMS database access, and the front end would be the main IMS Java main program. So any combination I could put together as far as back end, front end processing. So, in this case, what I have on slide 35 is an example of the metadata we'd have. So, we need to look at the dealer segment. We have dealer model and order, and how we then generate then the mapping of the DLI database view. So, we provide this for you with our metadata example. So, on slide 36, then, what I want to show you is how we take and do the select. Navigate through that select statement to build the SSA list. Our IMS Java code does this for you. Make the DL1 call. We do a path called in, so we use the D command code. Retrieve the data from the different segments in the database into the IO area. Then based upon your select, what fields you've identified you want to have pulled back, we give you back a result set to get processed in. So, slide 37, I just have a code simple example that kind of shows you how you could define an input message. One of the things that you could take and leverage with our IMS Java classes is because we have methods, our Java API, we support methods for getting the LL, ZZ, and TRAN code. So, in your input message definition that your application would write, you don't have to code LL, ZZ, TRAN code. You just got to code what the data stream looks like coming in, and then we will then provide for you the LLZZ TRAN code information. Same with the output message. I just define the output message, and then IMS itself, IMS Java classes, you can do that. We'll do the set methods on the LL, so you don't have to worry about doing LLZZ on the output message. Slide 39, then, is just kind of an example, trying to pull that together where I have, this case, my Java application is the one that's going to start out. It invokes the main routine, going to make the call to the message queue to get the message off the queue, and then you can see then where I make a call to COBOL. So I'm going to use Enterprise COBOL then to make the DL1 call, processing for me. One of the things I need to deal with then, which we show on slide 40, is the dealer application working with the COBOL back in. I have to use the AIB interface. I'm going to do this. So what I need to do is set up then where is the PCB. So we have to set the AIB with the PCB name, and then we make our call to the DLI using the AIB interface for processing. When I get the result back, then I can set the address of my database PCB, and I can also then interrogate the database PCB if I want to for processing. That just gives you an example how I could do that. But what if I want to do is go beyond our sample as far as Enterprise COBOL on Java? What if I want to be able to do is leverage then some existing COBOL code? So that's what I have to go back and build my Enterprise Wrapper class to do that. So on slide 42, I have an example for you here where what I need to do is find a PCB for my procedural code to use. But we said we're running a GMP region, we don't support a PCB list. So I could take advantage of the IMS inquiry call to get back then my PCB list. And once I get that then, in this case I could identify that the database PCB I want to use, I could set that address, and then what I do with this wrapper class then is make a call into my procedure routine, passing to that procedure routine my PCB address. So then you see on slide 43 what happens is when my back-end procedure code gets control, it can do its processing. It can make the call, COBOL to DLI, specifying that PCB address and then what my model segment is and then my SSA to retrieve that call. So here's a way I can marriage enterprise COBOL, my existing procedure code, inside of my environment, runtime environment, to access those applications that I have today. All right, slide 44 then. As we're coming to the end, we want to save some time for some questions. What I wanted to hopefully show you was kind of give you an overview of what enterprise COBOL gives you as far as accessing Java, what our IMS Java classes give you as far as new programming APIs, either against the IMS message queue, Java messages and services, or using the JDBC API then to write new applications to leverage existing IMS databases. So you can utilize those. Another thing I have for you is a commercial here. We do have coming up some application development workshops. We have one, in fact, today, July 14th, in Toronto on IMS COBOL and PL1. We have one coming up on July 16th in New York City, July 29th in Cincinnati, July 30th in Columbus, Ohio, and then August 13th in Phoenix, Arizona. So these are workshops. They're free workshops you could go to. We're going to have a chance to do some hands-on working, too, with this capability. To get some additional information on that, you can go to the IMS website, www.ibm.com/IMS, and you can find information about these different workshops. So, with that, what I want to be able to do then is turn it back to the operator so we have a chance for some question and answers.
Thank you, Kenny. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer the questions. To participate, please simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. One moment for the first question. Question one, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Again, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Please vote now. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Again, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Please vote now. Question 3. What version of IMS are you currently on? If version 10, press star 1. If version 9, press star 2. If version 8, press star 3. If version 7 and below, press star 4. Again, what version of IMS are you currently on? Version 10, press star 1. Version 9, press star 2. Version 8, press star 3. Version 7 and below, press star 4. Please vote now. Question 4. For those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? If you plan to install IMS 10 within the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you are interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. If you are not interested in IMS 10 at this time, press star 3. Again, for those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? If you plan to install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you are interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. And if you're not interested in IMS 10 at this time, press star 3. Please vote now. And question 5, we hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Again, if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today, if yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Please vote now. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. Alan, you may ask your question.
Hey, Kenny. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
Hey, can on the wrapper classes, can I use that technique to get from an existing IMS COBOL, you know, Enterprise COBOL app over to some new Java code?
Yeah, the idea is to provide, you know, interfaces either way.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks, sir. And can I ask another while I got your ear?
Sure.
The difference between the region types, you know, the Java region types versus traditional, is the only real difference whether the JVM's pre-fired or not, or?
Yeah, the only difference is in the case of our JMP regions, IMS is going to launch the JVM for you, and it'll stay there. In the case of the MPP region, you're using COBOL to launch the JVM. And so what happens then is when that application finishes, the JVM will be destroyed by COBOL itself, COBOL compile itself. So the MPP goes back to being a regular region again. So that's the one of the things you have to look at is the every time you schedule that program in an MPP region, you're going to relaunch JVM. So there's some overhead with that. So that's why I was suggesting what you might want to look at is the shared class cache. So at least you could save some overhead as far as your application classes being already up in the shared storage area. But you won't have that. You won't have the overhead for the JVM being started each time. So another thing you might look at is have MPP regions that are just set for wait for input only.
I mean, is there any difficulty in taking a traditional COBOL app and just moving it to a Java region type when you go to bridge it into Java? Is that
a challenge? Yeah, I mean, that's the other way you could use if you want to set up a JMP region and schedule the program there. What you could do is you could either have enterprise COBOL code that'll be have the main routine. So you could start out, you could write the whole thing in enterprise COBOL if you want. And then what you could do is inside your enterprise COBOL, there's where you'd make you'd have the wrapper class to allow you to make the call to the procedural code.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
John Nolting, you may ask your question.
Yeah, thank you. Question is, can you kind of recap just where the ZAP offload engine could come into play here and potential uses for it? You know, for instance, if you've got a current IMS transaction that's CPU intensive and you want to try to postpone an upgrade, can you turn that into some sort of a Java resource in order to offload it so that you could get some more workload out of an existing CPU? Any sort of recap of where ZAP comes into play with this technology?
Sure. What happens is the ZOS dispatcher, what it'll do is as you're dispatching work and you've bought a ZAP processor, it'll recognize that you're running Java code. So as soon as I go into Java code, then the dispatcher will ship the work over to that ZAP processor. So in the case, like I said, if I'm running inside of a JMP region and I'm running nothing but Java code, all of that processing would be underneath the ZAP. If I used Enterprise COBOL, which creates Java code, that would be running onto ZAP. But what happened is if I need to go from the Java world, the JVM, over to my procedure code, now I'm going to exit the JVM environment, right, because I'm just going to be running native COBOL code. So in that case, that's when I would switch back to a regular CP.
Do you have any examples or just thoughts on where you might leverage this? I mean, how you might extend an existing IMS application to leverage the ZAP engine, or what customers that you've worked with might have done?
What some customers have done is they've decided to use Java as their programming language. And so and they create subroutines. So they bundle together applications. You know, some they have, it's COBOL, and now they're going to use Java, so they bundle those applications together. And the other case would be, when you do that then, though, you do need to have that interoperability in the place. You do have to have the wrapper classes. And you could deploy that to a JMP environment if you want to have IMS be the one responsible for the launch of JVM. That's what I was showing you in that example where, and that was on that URL, on that one slide, that's where you could download some sample code. It shows you how to, do the interoperation between Enterprise COBOL and Java. So when you do that, say it's COBOL itself is going to launch the JVM for you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Alan Davies, you may ask your question.
Hi.
Hi there.
My question is really gets to the point of we're trying to move some processing that we use on other platforms to reuse it on ZEOS. And the place we want to use it is an existing conventional batch environment. And for IMS, we're basically running from JCL. using, see if I get the terminology right, DFSR C00, where we pass in our load module name as a PARM, and the PCB is, or PSB is provided to us as in our procedure division using through the PCB list. So recognizing that we that the nature of how we go after the PCBs might change, is there any way to utilize Java in that kind of runtime environment?
So that's going to be a batch. That's just at the BMP today, or just
it's
Java?
Not BMP. It's what I would call pure batch or
live batch in that environment.
Right. I guess the way it's been explained to me is that the we're basically running an IMS provided program that dynamically calls into load module name that we supply as PARM.
Okay, so
passing us the PSB.
Right. In the case of DLI batch, our IMS Java classes, we don't support that environment. So in your example, I mean your application, what you need to do is that you would probably, since you're running batch, ZOS batch, you could do the wrapper class and Enterprise COBOL class. And like I said, then, is the COBOL compiler will launch the JVM.
Right. Now that you mention it, we're already using Java in our Kix environment, and what we really were hoping to do was not necessarily use the IMS Java, because we're already doing all our IMS I/O in COBOL.
Gotcha.
That we call into from Java.
Huh?
However, we're doing that through the Kix link. We've been looking into converting that to do it through JNI using a little C intermediary.
Right.
And we've got that pretty, we think we can do that. Our problem seems to be just exactly how do you get the IMS DLI batch environment to run a Java program. You know, passing a PARM typically wants to run something from a conventional load module.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if there's a way to launch a JVM inside that DLI batch environment.
You'd have to use that. And then example I had with the LE options.
Right.
That user option routine.
Yep.
You would need to compile that, link that with your batch program. And then, when your COBOL, you'd have to add some COBOL code. It's going to do an invoke of the Java method, right?
So, in other words, the top-level program that IMS calls would be a COBOL program that
right,
would that turn around.
It's a COBOL program today, right?
And it is a COBOL program today, but it's loaded from a conventional load library as a load module.
Right.
I didn't think that Object COBOL had to be run from a DLL, I thought.
Well, what he'll do, what happens then, is you're going to, when you go through and use your Enterprise COBOL code, right, you're going to create the DLLs, and he could load that in. Now, you could also have COBOL compile it and put it out to a PDSE.
Okay.
Now, so, but it's going to be like a dynamic call.
Right.
And under the covers. What I'm saying is that as your existing procedure code is running, and you need to access Java, right? That's what you want to do?
Yes.
So in order to do that, you're going to have to go through that COBOL wrapper class I talked about. And when you do that, right, when you make a call to the wrapper class is going to do an invoke of your Java object, right? So there's a COBOL method called invoke.
Yes.
When you do that, okay, so invoke supports the Java native interface for you. So when that happens then, when you do it through COBOL, at that time, the COBOL recognized, okay, I'm running from a COBOL perspective, you're just running in an address space, a ZOS address space.
Right.
It doesn't know it's DLI batch or anything. So
okay.
It will launch, if you have to set up with that CE option, the LE options, you have to set up the fact, here's my JVM options for my COBOL, and you have the COBOL options set up, so that when that takes place, the COBOL will know how to launch the JVM
within that address space to then invoke that, that Java object. That's what has to take place.
Okay.
You still need, you know, you're going to need that wrapper class, and you're still going to need an invoke method then to call upon the Java object. So then COBOL can launch the JVM for you. IMS is not a way you've done that because it's just a, you know, ZOS batch address space.
Okay.
That makes sense?
So in other words, but you believe it that it that it's possible to use Java in an IMS batch, the way you've described it.
Yeah, because you're running. It's the same example I had with the MPP. IMS is not aware that you've used COBOL to launch the JVM. So in the batch environment, it's the same thing. You've used COBOL, and COBOL's going to launch the JVM for you in that batch environment.
Okay. Okay.
That should work. I think on my front slide, then I've got my URL. You could send me notes too if you need. If you've got any other questions?
Okay. Good. I appreciate that.
Super.
Thank you.
At this time, we have no further questions. I would like to turn it back to Mr. Blackman for a closing comment.
Well, I hope. This has been helpful. The questions were very good for me at the very end. I appreciate that. So hopefully you guys can get out there and look at this and maybe start building some new applications to leverage some of our Java technology. And like I say, I have my URL, so if you have additional questions, please feel free to send me a note. Thanks again for your time. I know it's time's precious. That's all.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.
Thanks, Corey.
You're welcome. You have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for calling the Digital Replay Service.